Well, this morning we're wrapping up Romans, the study of Romans. Our Sunday morning study, anyway. Sunday evening's going a little slower, and that's intentional. We're in the second half of Romans 15, starting verse 14 and on this morning. If we could, in fact, I had intended to put a map up and failed to, but if you can picture the map of the ancient world around the Mediterranean Sea, and Paul's travels form loops, really. They start from Jerusalem, goes up to Antioch, back to Jerusalem, then goes out into Asia, not Asia as we know it, but the Roman province of Asia, which was north and a little bit west of Israel. So he goes up there, he loops back again, then he goes up into Macedonia and loops back again. And we find his travels, each time he goes out another journey, he recovers the same ground he was over, but then he always heads into new territory. He's always looking for something new, new frontiers. And as we come into the end of Romans, we find that is very, very intentional. In fact, in chapter 15, verse 20, he says specifically, he explains what his ministry is all about. Verse 20, thus I aspired to preach the gospel, not where Christ was already named, so they would not build another man's foundation. But as it is written, they who had no news of him shall see, and they who have not heard shall understand. So Paul is very, very clear on what his mission in life is, and what his ministry mission is to preach where Christ is not known, where Christ is unknown. And so every time he goes on a journey, he's revisiting the churches he planted, but he's also pushing into new territory. In fact, to preach where Christ is unknown primarily means among the Gentiles, because the Jews, not all of them accepted Christ, obviously. Many opposed very strongly, and yet most of them had in one way or another heard of Christ, because he was very well known in Israel, and the Jews were still very Israel-centric. And so they know of this man walking around doing miracles, all this stuff. So even those out from Jerusalem have Israel, and there were Jews living in Egypt, living in Asia, living all over the place, in Rome. But most of them had known of Christ in some way. So thus Paul, part of his mission was to go to the Gentile. Not his part of his mission, his primary mission was to go to the Gentiles, because that's where Christ was unknown. So you see, all of his ministry geared around this whole focus of preaching where Christ is unknown. In verse 16, he again says that he is reaching out to the Gentiles, to be a minister of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles, ministering as a priest of the gospel of God, so my offering of the Gentiles may become acceptable. Interesting picture there of him as a priest offering something to God, but what he's offering is the fruit of his labors, the Gentiles. Now we could pause, and we will pause just a moment to note, priest is an Old Testament idea, Old Testament concept, of course. The priests brought offerings and sacrifices. But if you really trace it out in the New Testament, first of all, we're all priests, because we all have access through Christ to God. But the offerings we offer now, here, are people, are converts. Other places it says that the sacrifice of praise, again, Old Testament, but echoing, not echoing because that's past, prefiguring the New Testament, the sacrifice of a broken and contrite heart. So we have these things that we are literally offering to God. That we still, just like the priests in the Old Testament brought sacrifices picturing what Christ that was going to come, so we bring sacrifices of the reality of who we are and what we are. And of course, the central concept, in the central key verse of the entire book is Romans 12:1, offer yourselves, offer your bodies a living sacrifice. So Paul's mission is to preach where Christ is unknown among the Gentiles. But then in verse 17, he says, therefore in Christ Jesus I have found reason for boasting, in things pertaining to God. Paul is very clear in a number of his books, of his writings, that he is not going to boast in the human. In fact, he says in Philippians, if anybody else has things to boast about, I have more. Because I was a Jew of the Jews, basically, a son of Israel, a leader, a zealous for the law, a leader in Israel. If you want to start comparing Judaic credentials, he says, I have you beat. But, he says, I don't care about that stuff. Does not matter. The only thing that matters is Jesus Christ. So I count everything that would be a benefit to me, I count it as loss for Christ. And so when you realize this mindset of Paul, that everything in his life that is any accomplishment is nothing to him apart from Christ, then you look here and he says, I'm going to boast in the fact that the Gentiles are an acceptable sacrifice to God. Okay, so verse 16, I've offered the Gentiles the fruits of my ministry. Verse 17, therefore I will boast. Why? Because he recognizes it's not his own work. It's not his own power. It's not his own wisdom or his own strength. His mission is all about Christ, empowered by Christ. The focus is Christ all the way through. The only reason he's willing to boast about his ministry is because he recognizes it's not his ministry. It's Christ's work in him, through him. He's empowered by Christ. Number three, his mission is to preach where Christ is unknown. And it means he's always pushing onward. He's continuing onward. Now, there are times he stopped for a year or two, honestly, up to 3 years. But not usually. Normally, he's still moving. He's going. And so in verse 23, he points out, but now with no further place for me in these regions. Now, he's writing from Corinth, by the way. And we'll see this a little later, but I'll just note it here. He's in Corinth. He's heading toward Jerusalem, then plans to go on from there to Spain. And he's explaining what's going on here. He says, I have no more room for ministry in these areas. Now, we stop and ask ourselves, were they fully evangelized? No. He'd planted churches, but there were lots in the area who had not been converted. No doubt there were those who had not even heard of Christ. But he looks around, he says, I've got no more room to work here. Because he's staying true to his mission, to preach where Christ is unknown. So when he says, there's no more room for me to work in these areas, he's not saying, all the work's done, everybody quit preaching. He's saying, for me to fulfill my mission means I've got to move on. And so we see his whole life carefully, intentionally geared to what his mission is, to preach where Christ is unknown. And therefore, once he's preached an area, he's going to move on. Because he's following the call, the passion, the mission that God gave him. And that means always pushing onward. Now, incidentally, he apparently did arrive in Spain. The challenge is, Acts follows his ministry up to the point he's in prison in Rome, and then stops. Church history tells us he did then, there after that, be released and go on with his ministry to Spain, and then we're not sure from where. But then 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, these were written during this later part of his ministry. So he's always pushing for new ground, new opportunities. And then finally, in his mission to preach where Christ is unknown, he's doing this in spite of the difficulties he faces. Now, there are places he talks about the persecutions, the troubles. He said, I spent a day and a night in the deep. I've been beaten more times than I remember. I've been left for dead. I've been persecuted. And we follow his ministry through Acts. The detailed record we have, and we see persecution and after persecution after persecution. In spite of that, He's not losing focus on his mission. In fact, in Galatians, the earliest book he writes, very, very much toward the first of his ministry, he tells the Galatians, I arrived in weakness. I arrived basically as a patient, essentially. And you took care of me. So you see, from the very, very first of his ministry, there are difficulties. There are seemingly insurmountable problems. And yet, in spite of all those problems, all those difficulties, everything he faced, everything he went through, he never lost sight of his mission. He never let slide his mission. And so now he's writing to the Romans in preparation to visit Rome on his way to Spain. And he says, verse 31, or verse 30, pray for me, pray with me, strive together with me in your prayers to God for me, verse 31, that I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judea. So the first issue he's facing is unbelievers who have not accepted the gospel are going to persecute him in Judea. Well, if you know the story of Acts much at all, you know he arrived in Jerusalem. He was arrested by the Jewish, there was a riot of the Jews, so he was actually arrested by the Romans, and then the Jews are accusing him. And he's sent in chains and in prison on, and finally in prison on to Rome. So he finally arrives in Rome, but not the way he intended or planned. He's saying, pray for me that I be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judea. Stop and think about that for a moment. Was he rescued from those who are disobedient in Judea? Well, humanly, no. Humanly, this prayer was not answered. Because he gets to Judea, to Jerusalem, and yes, he's arrested by the Romans, but it's the Jews who are pushing for his arrest, for his trial, for his execution. So from the human, it looks like this prayer was not answered. He wasn't rescued. And yet, what we see is, even through that, he gets to Rome where he's wanting to go. And God uses even the persecution to further the gospel. He arrives in Rome, and as mentioned, apparently, according to church history, he's released from that imprisonment and then travels on to Spain and so on, continues his journeys where Christ is unknown. He's aware of the difficulties. He's experienced the troubles, and yet he's still pushing on to fulfill his mission. So difficulty number one he's facing is persecution, is opposition from unbelievers, carrying on in verse 1, 31. And that pray for me, strive with me in prayer, that my service for Jerusalem may prove acceptable to the saints. He's also facing potential rejection by believers. So not only are there unbelievers who are trying to shut him down and literally kill him, there are believers who are potentially rejecting him, saying, no, you're nuts. And we see this through his ministry as well, numerous times where he's going back to present his gospel, to answer those who are opposing him. And sometimes that opposition came from Christians who did not understand what was going on. Sometimes it was from people who were not Christians who were pretending to be, all right? But he says, my concern is that my service be acceptable, that I find room for ministry in Jerusalem. But again, he never went off mission. He knew what he was doing. He knew that he was going to preach where Christ is unknown. And everything he did guided toward that, circled around that, in spite of difficulties from unbelievers who were trying to persecute him, who were persecuting him, in spite of difficulties from believers who were rejecting him. He still says, I'm all about preaching where Christ is unknown. It's a beautiful picture of Paul staying focused, staying on track, knowing what he's about and doing it all the way through. Let's pause for a minute then and do some application. What's your mission? What's your mission in life? I've never shared this before, but it's a story that stuck with me. And I honestly can't remember where I read it now, but of a man who is a headhunter for a corporation. I don't want to detail it, but I believe I've told it here before. But he would interview for the CEO positions of large corporations, and his job was to find the next CEO of the big companies. And he had a way of doing it, of getting them to come into his office and sitting with them and relaxing and even putting his feet up on a coffee table or whatever, just getting totally relaxed. And then saying to them, once they're off guard, they're relaxed, he would sit up and say, "What's your goal in life?" He said he watched as these top corporate leaders fell apart and said, "I don't have a life goal." And that's how most people, can we be honest, that's how most of us live. Have you ever tried writing a mission statement for your life? What are you about? What do you want to accomplish? Recently heard someone present, actually it was on vacation, present this idea. He said there are, and he got it from another book or something, there are resume accomplishments, the things you would write on your resume. I got this degree, I did this, I accomplished this. Then there are eulogy accomplishments. Because in your eulogy at your funeral, they're not going to be listing the degrees you had or the business accomplishments. If that's all they're listing, it's kind of a sad life, honestly. That's the listing where the people you impacted, the lives you touched. What is your mission? What do you want people to say about you? In fact, I now remember seven habits of highly effective people. There we go. Start with the end in view. What do you want to accomplish at the end of your life? What is your mission? Be sure it's Christ-centered. There are businessmen. In fact, I had a conversation with one not too long ago who is very wealthy. And just in conversation, he said, "I've never failed." He said, "God has blessed me in the sense that I've never failed in business. Everything I've done has prospered." Now he's recognizing it as God's blessing. Well, I can't say that. Most of us can't say that, right? So it's not saying it has to be overt full-time ministry, but whatever your life's mission is, make it Christ-centered. If it's business, run business in a Christ-centered way with the goal of supporting the gospel. If it's family, and missions can change, I get that. There are different stages in life. But whatever your mission is, or how we fulfill the mission, I should say, can change. Be sure it's Christ-centered. Be sure it has eternal value. Where's your mission taking you? With Paul, it was to the Gentiles. Maybe for you, it's totally different. If it's family, then you're not going to be off among the Gentiles, so to speak, if your mission is your family, right? Be sure you're going where your mission takes you, not just where you happen to end up. Who are you depending on for your mission? When it's tough, when you feel weak, where do you get the strength to go on? Who's giving you direction? Who are you depending on for your life mission? What opportunities are you seeking? What new opportunities are there for you in your life mission? And again, I'm not giving details because it's going to be different for every single person. But we can use the term call, but I tend to avoid that word just because, well, number one, it's not usually the way the Bible uses the term. Number two, we overuse it so much we don't even know what the call means. But if you want to call it the call, then call it that. That's fine. But what new opportunities are there for you to fulfill the call, the mission, the passion that God has given you? Maybe you say, "I'm developing what I have now." Great. It's not all about new things, but it's about doing what you can where you are, but being open to God's leadership. Then what difficulties are you facing in your mission this morning? There's going to be problems. There's going to be difficulties. people will misunderstand, or people will oppose through misunderstanding, or maybe they'll oppose because they don't agree with you at all. Now, if good people, if godly people and are saying you shouldn't do that, and you're getting that response over and over from people, then you might want to look at your mission. Right? There's a saying that I like. It says, if one person calls you a donkey, ignore him. If two people call you a donkey, buy a saddle. If three people call you a donkey, check your ears. All right. In other words, if people are telling you over and over, this is what you should do or this is what you should not do, and you're getting the same advice from multiple people, pay attention. All right. Sometimes difficulties are just because we won't listen to people and listen to God speaking through people. But not always. Sometimes difficulties are just because that's how life works, or because there's opposition from the enemy trying to stop what God's trying to do in your life. What is your mission? You say, I'm my life's too small right now. I'm locked in. I can't have a mission. Everyone has a mission. Everyone has a call. Everyone has something you can accomplish for God. We tend to see prayer as kind of the last resort. Sometimes God brings us down and ties us down so that we can give ourselves to prayer. Sometimes there's maybe one or two people you can really invest in, but they're the ones who are going to make the difference in God's plan. What are the difficulties and what are the opportunities you are facing in the mission God's given you? Let's move on to chapter 16. Paul's community. He just talked about his call, his mission, his passion in the end of 15 of what he's doing and where he's going and why and how. But now he starts just listing people. We're not going to read through all the names. But I just want to note something. Paul recognized no one can be effective alone. Our effectiveness is extremely limited if we're trying to do everything on our own, by ourselves. We're made for community. Right in Genesis, he said, it's not good for man to be alone. And I understand that's a reference to marriage. But there's a broader reference there as well, that we are made for a larger community. Paul was very, very good, apparently, from what we can pick up, at networking, at building a network of people. Because one thing that confuses scholars about this book, Paul had never visited Rome. He told him, I've never seen you. I've not been there, all right? And yet there's a whole list of people who live in Rome he sends his greetings to. And it's not like, hey, I heard of this guy. Say hi to him for me. He comes, it starts out with a Phoebe, a servant of the church, a receiver in a manner, a receiver in the Lord in a manner worthy of the saints. In other words, she's worked hard and a lot, and she's there or coming there. So open your arms and your hearts and your homes and your resources to her. But then he goes on, a Prisca and Aquila. Priscilla is termed in Acts, same couple we found in Acts. Greet Epineus, greet Mary, greet Andronicus and Junius, greet Amphiatus, and so on. Name after name of people who are in the church Paul never visited, he already knows. Now, number one, you say, why? How does that work? Well, number one, if you remember way back at the beginning of the series, the emperor kicked the Jews out of Rome. Said, get out of here, you guys cause so much problems. And so they scatter. So Paul has met many of these on his journeys, and then when that ban was lifted, they returned. But what that tells us is this. Paul was networking through his journeys. He was meeting people. He was building relationships so that there was a church he'd never visited, but there's quite a large group of people he knew because of his networking. Paul worked closely, I know I'm a little out of order here, but Paul worked closely with a smaller group of people. So he says he's in Corinth, which is a strong church. And it has problems, yes, read the books of Corinthians, but it's still a fairly large, strong church. And he lists a few people in verses 21 to 24 who are working with him. Timothy, yes, the same man that 1 Timothy are written to. Timothy, my fellow worker, greets you. Lucius and Jason and Sosipater. Tertius, who wrote this letter, he was the scribe, the amanuensis, the secretary, if you will, who actually penned the letter. Gaius, Erastus, there's this small group of people who he's working with very closely, where he's there. So we see as a man who's networking broadly. He's making friends, building genuine relationships across the board. And there's a smaller group of people around him that he works with closely. That's the model for effective ministry. That's the model for effective life. If I don't embarrass anybody, but I don't think I'll embarrass anybody this morning. If I need to know a recommendation for something that I have no idea, you know who I'll often call? Justin Chesser. Because he knows so many people, he'll know somebody who can give some advice, right? Networking is valuable. And I'm not that good at it. I'm learning. But you build a broad network, and you build a few close friends you can trust and rely on. And that's what Paul did. And frankly, it's a great pattern for us. And then verses 17 through 20, he gives a warning. He says, watch out for troublemakers. Those who cause division, those who cause dissension, both personal, because he's in the middle of giving his greetings. He says, oh, by the way, watch out for troublemakers. And also doctrinal, who teach things that you did not receive. In other words, who's bringing some other doctrine, causing trouble. So while you're networking, while you're building, be careful not to bring troublemakers into your close network. Does that make sense? Watch out for troublemakers, the divisive people who are going to cause trouble wherever they go. Watch out for them. Mark them. Avoid them. Keep your eye on them. But build your network, because no one is effective alone. So who's in your community? That was Paul's community. Who's in your community? Build a broad network. Ideally, there should be lots of people that you have connection with, that you can touch base with. Build a broad network. Build a support structure, that close-knit group that you can depend on day to day to be there. And be just like Paul says, beware of troublemakers. Avoid those. Make no friend with a contentious man, with an angry man from the Old Testament. Awesome picture of Paul's passion, his mission, his call, and how he accomplishes it. He's staying on track. He's staying on target. He knows what he's doing and why and how. He's building a network that helps him do it. And that's the pattern for effective Christian living throughout all of history. Wrapping up then, the last few verses are a doxology. Praise to God. And it doesn't just pick up the idea of relationship and ministry here. It goes back to the entire book. It's the capstone for the entire book. Now to him who's able to establish you, according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ. In other words, God can settle you and establish you in the Christian life, strengthen you. It's the idea of being strong, therefore immovable. Being strengthened, and so you're not shifting, you're not shaken. Who's able to establish you or strengthen you by means of the gospel and by learning of Jesus Christ. Those are the two ways we are strengthened in the Christian life. The gospel, understanding what Christ did for us. Understanding the incredible price he paid. How valuable we are to God, shown by that. How much care God takes for us. By learning of Jesus Christ, how did he react to people? How did he respond to trouble? How did he react when he was overwhelmed? What did he do to recover, to recuperate? Learning of Jesus Christ, the preaching of Jesus Christ, and the gospel are the ways God establishes us. By learning Jesus Christ through Scripture, unto faith, interesting phrase, unto the obedience of faith, end of verse 28. In other words, to faith that obeys. To trusting Christ so much that we're willing to walk with him regardless of the difficulties, regardless of what the pressures are. There's obedience of faith to saying, I trust him. If I don't understand, I'll walk with him. to God who's able to establish you, to him be glory. In fact, this verse in the original, Paul kind of loses track of it. It's terrible grammatically. He gets so excited about what he's saying about God can establish you and through the gospel, through Jesus Christ. He kind of loses himself and starts over. See a little bit of Paul's excitement in what he's saying coming through there. To God who's able to establish you, to him be glory through Jesus Christ forever. Because you and I, as we walk with Christ, the act of walking with Christ, of being established in Christ itself glorifies God. The little things daily as we walk, as we grow, that's what glorifies God through Jesus Christ forever. Incredible, incredible truth. And I feel like we've just scratched the surface as we've gone through this book. But God can establish you, can walk with you, can make you fruitful, can make you flourish in the life you have today, this week, right now. I'd like to close with a song, if the musician would come, if Sharon would come. Number 36. To God be the glory, great things he has done. Let's stand this morning and just worship for what he's done through Christ, for the fact of redemption, for the reality of redemption, for all that he has done for us, will do in us. The future's bright in him.